news, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton. It's 8:07. We'll be making our way down to the Wharf and the Event Center at the 2nd Coastal Alabama Business Expo. So come by, learn more about businesses down along the coastline, and say hello to the crew from FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, we'll have a really cool giveaway too, but you'll have to get up there to see what we're giving away. Yep. So that starts at 10 a.m. this morning there at the Event Center next to the Wharf, and we'd love to see you down there. It is a Tuesday. That means it's time to talk with Quinn Hillier. You can read his work. He writes for The Advocate, NOLA.com, but QuinnHillier.com as well. Good morning, Quinn.
Good morning, guys.
First things first, you had some football over the weekend. I know you attended the game at South Alabama because your Tulane Green Wave were in town, and turned out to be a pretty good game, huh?
It was a nerve-wracking game. First of all, I do have to say that's the first time I've gone to Hancock-Whitney Stadium, and it's a nice facility. I think it's perfect for their needs. I was disappointed that the stands were only maybe half or barely more than half full. I think we need better attendance out there. I was disappointed that Tulane didn't send more fans over 2 hours away to watch their Green Wave. But the stadium is very nice. The people that work there all seem happy, and they're polite, and they're helpful, and you know, the stands are nice, and it was one heck of a game. Tulane, get this. In the first about 6 or 7 minutes of the game, South outscored Tulane 14-0. In the last about 6 minutes of the game, South outscored Tulane 14-0. In the middle 48 minutes, Tulane outscored South 33-3. I've almost never seen a game that was dramatic in its swings, but South really put the scare in Tulane fans, and it went down to a 2-point play at the end, and Tulane barely held on, but yeah. South put up a good effort, and they're going to be a good team.
Good deal. That's a good effort against a good program. Tulane's no joke.
Yeah, and Dan and I, we love going over to the stadium when we do. I wanted to complain about how few people were out there, but I wasn't there, so what is my complaint worth? Not a whole lot. A lot of local politics, well, a lot of politics all over to discuss with you this morning, Quinn, but we're still talking about the municipal elections, especially, obviously, with the mayoral runoff on the way. But District 2, and a story we've been following day in and day out, it continues to have new twists and turns. Yesterday, a judge ordered City Councilman William Carroll to put up $25,000 if he wants to pay for the cost of contesting last month's election and follow through with the challenge. Carroll, just like Reggie Hill was claiming before the election, says, hey, look into the residency of the winner of that District 2 race, Samantha Ingram. Now, we've talked about this so often, Quinn. Carroll lost the election, right? So, and lost it without making it to a runoff. How badly does he want to fight this? I guess we'll find out if he puts up the $25,000 to challenge it.
Well, I want him to fight it, and this is nothing against Samantha Ingram, who really impresses me as a good candidate. But I said on the show last week, right at this time, that William Carroll should sue, or somebody should sue, because my reading of the law is she is just not eligible, and I have no idea why a local judge would, and I didn't even see which judge it was, would make William Carroll put up $25,000 to try to uphold election law.
It was Hambright, by the way.
Okay. I don't understand it. Election law is election law, and if it says that you have to be a bona fide resident, a legal resident as your primary resident in Mobile for a year or whatever the term is for you to be elected or to serve, then that's what it means. And if she voted in last November in Georgia, I think it was Georgia.
Yeah.
She voted in Georgia last November. Then she is not eligible. Black letter law.
Yeah. So, I mean, it seems pretty straightforward, you would think, if Georgia's election laws are that you have to be have a primary residence there for a year before you vote, and Alabama or Mobile municipal election law is that you have to have residency in that city for a certain amount of time, I think a year, then it seems pretty clear cut. But in this case, Quinn, whether it was the Reggie Hill lawsuit to start with or now what Carroll's trying to do, the process seems a little confusing, maybe. It seems like folks are throwing their hands up in the air, like, well, we don't really know what to do. I guess you can just challenge it now.
Look. The Reggie Hill lawsuit, Judge Phillips threw that out because it was not filed properly, meaning that, you know, the I's weren't dotted, the T's weren't crossed. He filed the suit against the wrong technically against the wrong person, et cetera, et cetera. It just wasn't legally correct. But she specifically said she was not ruling on the underlying merits of his charges, meaning not ruling on whether or not Samantha Ingram actually is eligible. Again, this should be important to everybody. I am so sick all across the nation of election law not being enforced.
Mm-hmm.
And if it says it in the law, then by God, you've got to enforce it. And these judges darn well better do it too.
Yeah, and through our conversation about this, Quinn, part of me has just been wondering how badly Carroll wants to fight this. Like, is he willing to put in the work for an election that clearly his constituents voted for someone else for? But Sheila texted yesterday, and I agree completely with what she said. This is about, and what you're saying now, it's about election integrity, right? It's bigger than just the people currently involved in this race. Sheila said, if you can't follow the election requirements, what other rules would you break?
Well, exactly. And look, this is not me saying I prefer William Carroll to Ingram. It is not that at all. If she gets thrown out, I don't think Carroll gets it. I think they have to have a special election, which is, you know, a pain in the neck for everybody to go through. But by gosh, enforce the election law. Do it. I am so frustrated that it is so hard to contest election law violations. It should be easy.
I don't know exactly what she did in Georgia. She was gone a long time. She was the assistant superintendent of Mobile County Public Schools when she was here.
Right, so very impressive.
She leaves for Georgia in 2007 or so. I suppose she was in education. I don't know, but one thing I am noticing, it's interesting, there is no coverage of this story in any of the outlets in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So she never became somebody that was evidently enough of a political figure over there where this story's got any legs in Fulton County or Athens or any other place where she resided in Georgia. It's not a story. Only
yeah,
here.
Now look, you can have a job in one state and, you know, and keep your primary residence, say, at your parents' house. If you keep that as your primary legal residence. I mean, George and Barbara Bush, the elder, registered for years and years from a hotel room in Houston, okay? So it's legal. You can choose your legal residence for voting purposes, but once you choose it, that means, by gosh, that is your legal residence.
Mm-hmm.
And she chose Georgia last year and voted last November in Georgia. Case closed.
Hmm. Talking with Quinn Hillier, and meanwhile, I'm figuring out why I'm such a stooge over here with just one house where I live. Seems like all the stories we have are people with three and four and five houses.
That's what I'm thinking.
All over the place.
You're good for them, I guess.
Also, Quinn, with the mayoral runoff, and it will be here before we know it. We're basically 2.5 weeks out now. Are you thinking we may see any endorsements from the two candidates who fell out and didn't make the runoff, from Paul Prine or Connie Hudson, or do you think they're just going to kind of keep things the way they are and see how it turns out?
I really don't know. I mean, obviously there are hard feelings between Prine and the Stimson camp, and therefore one would assume that Prine is not inclined to endorse the Stimson camp candidate, Spiro Chiarigotis, but who knows? As far as Connie Hudson, I think she was really frustrated and hurt that the mayor did not go with her in the first place, and I think there's some hard feelings. So I don't know what she's going to do. I don't know if it makes that big a difference. I think it might make a difference at the margins, but and this could be a race where the margins are what matter. But I don't know. I've sort of got a sense that both of them might just sit it out.
I think my sense on this is it's going to be the camp that gets the vote out. It's going to be the camp that gets the people, make sure that they're activated. The camp that's most organized, and you know, Chiarigotis has got all the funding. So if money buys you organization and buys you the opportunity to organize the voters, then I would give I would say that he may have an advantage there, because it's going to be a matter of who actually gets their people out to vote, and maybe more of them than the first time around, if that's even possible.
Yeah. Well, again, it was a low enough turnout the first time that it's really hard to it's really hard to judge. It's not like where 80% turned out the first time and so you know where the votes are. We do not know where the non-voters are. I mean, but the people that didn't vote, we don't know which camp they would be in if they had voted.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that all you got to do is reach into the non-voters from the first one and get them to come out and vote for you, and you know, and add them presumably to the ones you've got. But we don't know what their views are. We just don't.
And trying to differentiate between the candidates, Dalton. One thing jumped out at me, and you can say whatever, but I didn't realize that Drummond was 69 years of age. So that puts one candidate in his lower 40s, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Just in terms of age and how long you can do the job. You know, if you're looking for some dividers somewhere along the way,
that's one of them.
You have an older candidate against a younger one.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you, Mayor Stimson has made that point in the primary, not directed against Barbara Drummond, but he has made the point that it's a job that takes a lot of energy. He was famous for working very long days. He started very early in the morning and would go into the evening every single day, basically, for the past 12 years. And it's a job that takes energy, and clearly Spiro Chiarigotis is better positioned by terms of his age to have the energy. And, you know, people might want to say, well, maybe that's important. This city, you know, there's a lot on the mayor's plate right now.
Yeah, I work long days. I'm just not famous for it. But yeah. Maybe one day.
I worked long days starting very early, but by the end of the day, I'm not squat.
I do want to say one thing, by the way, that I had thought was a detriment for Chiarigotis, and now it sounds better. He was talking early on about bringing trolleys or streetcars back to Mobile, and I was like, how the heck are you going to pay for that? You got to lay the track. I mean, it's very complicated, very expensive. Now he's clarified he means trackless trolleys.
Yeah,
basically,
yeah.
They're basically buses, but they're designed to look like trolleys, and they've got a better feel. And that actually could be, you know, could add to the charm of Mobile. So once he said trackless trolleys, that goes from being a detriment in my book to being a really interesting idea.
Yeah, I've seen them before. I'm trying to remember what city in Florida we were in. It's usually places that have a lot of history or a lot of things to check out downtown.
Yeah, like just St. Augustine, something like that.
Maybe it was St. Augustine, and it's more of an open feeling. You can look around and feel like you're, I don't know, participating in something rather than just riding on the bus. So
exactly.
I'm more and more interested in that idea, too, the more I think about it. A lot to get to with you, Quinn, on the other side of the break. Some big elections on the way, and many of those, you have candidates basically running unopposed, or at least they have some opponents that don't look to be much of a challenge. We'll get into that and a whole lot more on the way next.
It is 821. Text line right there for you, 251-343-0106. On the text line, somebody saying, Dan, never bring up a woman's age. I guess that's, well, he's running for mayor. And what, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying I just noticed that that is a differentiation point between the two candidates.
Yeah, well, you've upset the text line now.
I have, I know.
Wow, 251-343-0106.
Happy Mother's Day. I feel like see
you,
it early.
I feel like you've said worse before, but that's not how they feel on the text line.
Not right now.
Continuing our conversation with Quinn Hillier, and I just want to, with the mayoral conversation quickly, Quinn, you know, these municipal elections are quote-unquote nonpartisan, right? But that's not how America is right now anyway. I mean, everyone picks their side. And it's, you know, Barbara Drummond is a Democrat state representative. I don't know if Spiro has laid out his exact, you know, what side of the aisle he sits on, but that, that plays a big part in this too, right? But a lot of it, people just guessing what kind of party the person might be in, or how do you feel about these municipals still being quote-unquote nonpartisan?
I actually like it. I think that way you can focus on the candidate and not on the label. So I think it's a good idea. You know, and looking at Barbara Drummond, she can come across as she's a legitimately nice and warm person, and she can come across that way without either the benefit or the discredit of being an active Democrat, and so she can run on her own merits. And look, voters are smart enough to figure out sort of governing philosophy without the label. But still, I think the label gets in the way, and I think it's sort of refreshing not to have it.
Well, we will have labels on the primaries, which are next up after the runoffs, and, of course, the general elections with some congressional seats. Well, pretty much all the congressional seats are back up. Shamari Figures doesn't appear to have a big-time Republican challenger to this point. And then for the gubernatorial, you know, many people already crowning Tommy Tuberville, even though there are several other names in that race. You'd like to see some opposition for both, I would assume?
Yeah, look, I think we were very ill-served by not having active races for governor the last couple of times. I mean, you know, seriously contested races for governor and for others. I think people are too afraid of taking on Tommy Tuberville, and, you know, he hasn't shown. It's a completely different job to be a senator, one of 100 sort of spouting off and actually doing the day-to-day work of governing as a governor. I think he should have to go earn it. Shamari Figures seems bright, energetic, you know, Democratic freshman, but That is a seat which, look, I got way into the redistricting weeds last time, but that is a seat that in an off-year election, a non-presidential election, should be about 50-50. Shamari Figures won 54.5, I think, to 45.5, but the turnout is different. The electorate is different in a midterm election. Republicans should be contesting that seat. I'm not saying who should win, who shouldn't win. I'm just saying, you know, we don't have enough contested seats across the country right now. Too many congressmen get in. They just sort of skate in to re-election, and I don't think that's good for democracy. Republicans should put somebody up there, and a Republican challenger in the primary should come up against against Tuberville for governor, and the Democrats should put up somebody for governor against Tuberville. We need more competition.
The Democratic Party in the state of Alabama, kind of a messy situation, or it has been for a number of years, disorganized and not focused. What would you say?
Disorganized, not focused, and you know, that's as a conservative, that's sort of, you know, that doesn't make me unhappy to see the other side unfocused, but it's really not good for our small R republic, our small R Republican system of government, and I'd like to see a little more competition in there.
All right, Quinn, if folks want to read what you're writing or just get up with you online, how can they do that?
Well, you can sign up at QuinnHillier.com for absolutely free. You can subscribe, you get something out every Tuesday, or just go and Google me and NOLA.com.
Thanks a bunch, Quinn. We'll talk again in 1 week.
Appreciate
okay. You got it. Tulane fan, Quinn Hillier.
That's right. More Mobile mornings on the way. 251-343-0106.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. 834 to the text line very quickly. Charles says, no chance William has $25K to pay court. If so, I'd like to know where it came from. Well, we'll see. It's attorneys. Look at the quote by the attorney. It didn't seem like the 25. This is William Carroll challenging the election of
Samantha Ingram.
Samantha Ingram. Hambright, the judge yesterday set the amount at $25,000 for him to challenge. Reynolds Sorrell, one of the lawyers representing Carroll, said the legal team was well aware of the requirements and had inquired with the circuit clerk's office what the amount would be. Quote, now that the judge has determined what those costs are, we're working with our client to make sure those are paid. That's what he said to Fox 10 News anyway, like they're going to proceed.
Yeah, I think Carroll could, I think he has the 25 grand. I think the question is whether or not he wants to fight it. And we'll see. I'm certain that he could cover that if he had to. Butterknife says, oh my gosh, he's a Republican. Give me a break. I was talking about the nonpartisan, the quote unquote nonpartisan way that municipal elections are run. And we know that Barbara Drummond is a Democrat, yep, has it by her name in the state legislature. And I was saying, you know, I would assume that Spiro is a Republican, but again, that's me assuming. I mean, and Butterknife says, walks like a duck, squats like a duck. It is a duck. Yeah, I agree with you. But he hasn't come out and said, unless I missed it, I'm a Republican, vote for me for mayor of Mobile.
It's funny, when there's a Democratic mayor, you know they're Democrat.
Yeah.
Like the mayor of Huntsville, the mayor of Tuscaloosa.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Democrat.
Birmingham, Montgomery.
Yeah, Montgomery, Birmingham.
Yeah, but not here. And then Butterknife says, talk about all the outside money. And Butterknife on a roll this morning, and very complainy, by the way, which seems to be common these days.
He's not the only one.
Talk about the outside money that has been contributed to the Spiro race. Why are so many outsiders trying to get him elected? And, you know, John Sharp, I hope I kept this article up. Yeah, John Sharp put out another good article along with Hannah Denham today, just looking into the fundraising for the race. And you mentioned it, Dan. Spiro does have quite the financial lead,
yeah,
in campaign funds. And Barbara Drummond has raised less than $1 million less than Spiro has. Although since making the runoff, she's raised, let's see, in the first days of the runoff cycle, she raised nearly $420,000 as of September 3rd. She's also brought in more total donations than her opponent. Sharp goes on a little bit later in the article and talking about kind of who has donated. Chair Gottes reported more than 700 donors. He brought in larger checks and fewer donors than Drummond, who brought in smaller donations from more donors.
It's interesting.
But he says major PACs that have donated to Cherry Gottes's campaign include South Alabamians for Good Government and One Mobile PAC. Those two organizations were both supportive of Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson. Those sound like local interests to me, Butterknife. South Alabamians for Good Government and One Mobile PAC. Another $25,000 came from Autry Greer and Sons, Inc., Greer's Grocery Stores. That makes sense, right? Cherry Gottes's top individual donor was David Woods of Montgomery, who contributed $20,000. Sharp writes, Woods owns the WCOV Fox television station and lost at a 2019 runoff mayoral election to the Montgomery mayor, Stephen Reed. Cherry Gottes's campaign money so far largely came from Alabama, 97% of his funding, but also 11 other states, including Florida and Mississippi. They write, Drummond reported more than 1,100 donors, including more than $190,000 in individual contributions, nearly $150,000 in PAC funding, and nearly $80,000 in business or other group contributions. Major PACs that have contributed to her campaign include the Alabama Voice of Teachers for Education and Alabama Works PAC. That PAC, created by the House Minority Leader Anthony Daniels, and backs Democratic candidates around the state. But to directly answer Butterknife, who said, talk about all the outside money that has been contributed to the Spiro race, the last line lines here from the Sharp article. Representative Drummond's campaign has earned more support from outside Alabama.
Ooh, wow.
With cash funneling in from 43 other states like Texas, Illinois, and Washington, D.C. Alabama makes up 93% of her funding, 97% of Spiro's funding. So, Butterknife, who says, talk about all the outside money that has been contributed to the Spiro race. Why are so many outsiders trying to get him elected? Why don't you tell me, why are so many outsiders trying to get Barbara Drummond elected, Butterknife? He says, not willing to call a spade, but whenever someone says something that this radio station doesn't agree with, you're real quick to call them woke or purple-haired liberals.
I'm not.
Not on the morning show. That doesn't happen too often, Butterknife. And he continues, sounds like Republican PACs. You're just, all right, Butterknife. I'm stamping it. Idiot stamp for the morning. We'll go back to your text tomorrow.
Yeah, your hair is whatever color, but Dalton did just call you an idiot. You know,
not a liberal idiot, just an idiot.
If I were, look, a lot of this, and those who may know me personally or know me for years, you're probably listening and saying, you know, Dan's doing a lot of learning on the job. I am. There's no doubt about that. But if I were to try to, what do we have, 3 weeks to go now? Exactly 3 weeks, right?
So no, 2 weeks.
2 weeks, okay. So,
see, learning on the job.
Learning on the job. I'd learn right there. If I were to talk to a political operative, I would say, I would want to know, okay, if you have the most money, you've got 2 weeks to go, there has to be a way that you turn that money into votes. You don't buy the election, but you use the money. How do you use that money to your advantage to make sure that you get the votes out in 2 weeks? That's my question.
You pay more people to knock on doors.
Well, probably.
You pay more people to stand out in the medians with those signs up.
Yeah.
You pay more for advertising on TV
really,
and radio.
What really, really, really works? If you have that much more money, what would you do to assure that we're going to maximize the money we have? Mm-hmm. We're not going to take a chance here. You know,
that's where having a great campaign staff, a campaign manager comes in handy, right?
Yeah.
And Candace Cooksey, helping run things for Spiro. Drummond has a team around her that's won elections previously. So they probably have a pretty good template of how they think things should go. It's just whether you have the money to follow through completely on that.
Well, that's it. Yeah. That question's... That's moot. They've got the money. How do you use the money, utilize the money to turn into votes? That's what I would ask somebody that is a lot more experienced than I.
Let's head to the phone lines and talk with Freddie. Good morning, Freddie.
Good morning. I've enjoyed all your guests this week so far. I mean, it's only Tuesday, so I just expect things to get better.
Thank you, Freddie.
So, Freddie, I've seen you online, too, talking about this election, and I saw some complaints from some folks out in West Mobile saying they weren't really sure where their polling places were, and they said they didn't do a great job letting people know when the election was or how to get out there, and you were kind of directly disputing that, at least what I saw online.
Yeah, and I do, and I thought that the city did a great job of taking notifying people and got them information out. I know I worked hard to get the information out in my subdivision to make sure people understood that we vote in Ward 6.4, which is Woodridge over off of Cottage Hill or off of Schillinger's Road. So I know that's our area. But I think a lot of the confusion, it was around people who were used to going to Creekwood in the past, and that's actually where we voted for the annexation. Was it Creekwood? It just automatically thought, I got to go to Creekwood.
Yep. Excuse me. Go ahead.
So that, I think that led to part of the confusion. But one of the things that I'm going to do for my area is I'm going to put up a voting precinct at the exits of all the roads going out of the subdivision. That way, people will know, okay, I got to go to 6.4, I got to go to Woodridge.
Hmm.
So that's what I'm doing to take and do that.
That's a really good idea.
So the other thing that I wanted to talk about was the youth factor. And I sent a text yesterday, I don't know if it got read or not, but I sent a text yesterday. This is the youngest city council that I can ever remember.
Hmm.
At any time in Mobile's history. I don't know that there's ever been one this young. And my personal opinion, since I are one, is the boomers need to sit down and let the young people take over who have a vision for the future. And that's what I like about Spiro is he has that vision for the future to do things to take and move the city forward. I enjoyed your interview with my councilman, Josh Wood, yesterday morning. It's those kind of people who have a vision for let's move forward. Let's stop trying this old stuff and let's try some new stuff.
I thought Josh Woods was very well informed. He answered every question in length that we had, and he was an overwhelming choice by the citizens who voted for him.
You're right, though, Freddie. I haven't really thought about it, but you look at the council, let's say in November, when Bo Fleming officially takes over for Joel Daves, and you look at the rest of the council members there, it is a much younger council than I can ever remember seeing in Mobile.
Yeah. So the other part of this is one of the things that is necessary is I'm glad the people like Gina Gregory and C.J. Small are there, because that gives you some of that institutional knowledge that if you have a complete turnover, you lose. I mean, you've got to have that institutional knowledge.
I agree. So, I think it's a pretty good balance, but it is that's a really good point. Young council, different ideas, different attitudes than we've seen in the past as well, Freddie.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that kind of gets me with Barbara Drummond, I think anybody that running for the mayor's job in Mobile will do a good job. I just think that Spiro will do a better job. So the other thing is that, of course, Barbara, when she was part of Sam Jones' administration, her and Sam Jones opposed annexation out in our area. They were against letting us have that referendum. So that's a big thing that sticks in my craw right there, is the fact that they didn't want us to have a voice to be able to take and decide for ourselves whether we wanted to join the city.
Freddie, thanks for your time this morning. We appreciate that. A lot of good thoughts.
All right, man.
There you go. Freddie, join us this morning, 251-343-0106. If you, too, would like to jump in, get to a couple texts and then a story that Dan and I would really, really like to discuss before the end of the show.
Sure.
This is Scott from Pensacola. You were talking about the small buses that look like trolleys. We have those in Pensacola, and they use them over at Pensacola Beach. They're a lot more attractive than the big, ugly buses, and because they're smaller, they're a little bit more efficient for moving around smaller numbers of people.
Yeah.
At Christmas time, and I believe other times of year, you can rent them on the weekends and do things like go caroling to local nursing homes with your church group.
I think they're used for weddings now, too. So that's a company that's got those things for rent. Mm. You can wedding parties, going to get the picture taken, whatever. Small groups of 30 or 40 or whatever.
Yeah. Then you have the opposite reaction here from T-Bone. A bus open to the heat and mosquitoes, that will be a big hit. I mean, it does have its drawbacks, T-Bone. I don't like the idea of having open-air trolley buses. I mean, if you're just trying to go from, way out west on, let's say, Cottage Hill and make it to your job on a service road, you're not going to want to ride in a trolley every day there and back.
But I think these things will be deployed downtown mostly.
Yeah, if you hop off the Amtrak or you fly into our new airport and you get downtown and you're like, hey, I'd like to take a nice little ride around the city and just see what's up. A trolley is a great way to do that, especially if you can incorporate. And someone said, is it Gulf Coast Tours? Or somebody said there's already some trolleys running downtown.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Or was it
run by the city
food,
yet?
Some tour that they have downtown. I wish I had that text in front of me. Dan says, Prine and Hudson seemed to split West and South Mobile. Does this mean this is now a battle for those areas? Seems to me. Gardner says, we should be talking about political parties and which one would be best for Mobile. Does Mobile want a Democrat in charge? And I think a majority of people that go out to vote are voting based on whether they think the candidate is a Republican or Democrat. And even though these are nonpartisan elections, I think that's generally how you'll see things. Now, maybe a lot more quote-unquote independent voters that maybe not as independent when they're voting in federal elections, but are more likely to vote independently for something like a municipal election. But I still think you take a vast majority of the voters, they're saying, okay, this person's probably a Democrat, I'm going to vote for them, or this person is a Republican, I'm going to vote for them.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's basically it. And you know, we know where the line is. It's pretty clear.
A couple more texts. The trolley buses are air-conditioned just like any other bus. They're essentially a bus that's just decorated to look like a cute little trolley.
Well, they're air-conditioned. Okay.
That's what texter here from Pensacola says. Tim says, but if you lose that bad, talking about Carol, what do you actually have? Because it's pretty evident that people don't want you to represent them. He said, and I'm not in favor of somebody from Georgia being on the city council. And then referencing Freddie's call, he said, this old guy seems like he likes to be in the city because he knows a whole lot about it. So why did he move into the county in the first place? Then all of a sudden decided he wanted to change the county into the city when he could have just stayed in the city. It's probably a question better answered by Freddie, yeah, if he's able to.
You missed your opportunity because Freddie has left the building here. We do want to get to a story at the...
Who's the baddest man in the White House?
Who's the baddest dude in D.C.? The bat, and might not be exactly who you think, but he's building a reputation.
Yeah, a bit of a reputation.
It is 850 with Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. And feel free to text or call 251-343-0106. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 854 on Mobile Mornings. Text line 251-343-0106.
Yeah, and I would have never guessed this when the Trump administration came into office, but of all the hotheads that they likely have there in the White House, and there's a number of them, you could tell, turns out that the maddest man of them all might be our very own Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent.
So, Scott Bessent was the one who, I guess it was held a secret or maybe a poorly kept secret. He was the one that gave the black eye to Elon Musk.
Mm-hmm. That was alleged, right? So
that was at the White House.
Well, you saw the black eye that Musk had back then during his breakup press conference, right? Before he went fully against Trump for a time, if you remember. But I think it was Steve Bannon who said, yeah, Musk initiated physical contact by ramming his shoulder into Bessent's rib cage, prompting Bessent to retaliate, and that the incident was eventually defused by aides. And then Bessent denied causing the injury. He said, I can 100% say I did not give him the black eye. But they basically said they got into a little tussle there over a disagreement. Now you have this week some reporting coming out that Treasury Secretary Bessent and Bill Pulte, the director of the Federal Housing Finance Agency, got into an explosive argument last week with threats of physical violence involved.
I like this. I like it.
I would not have guessed Bessent would be... I mean, the guy lives... notoriously in the largest, pinkest Barbie house in the Hamptons, or I don't know where that house is.
I'm looking
is.
At a picture of the house, and really, it's very, it's pastel pink colored, and not everybody owns a pink house.
And he's gay, not that it matters. He has a husband and children. The Democrats don't like you bringing that up, but one of the most important players in the Trump administration is a gay man.
Mm-hmm.
So how could that be when Trump is so homophobic and mean and everything? But Bessent may just be the alpha of this White House. So you have 37-year-old Pulte, 63-year-old Bessent, and they said Bessent was upset that Pulte was going to Trump and talking bad about him behind his back. At one point, the Treasury chief lashed out at Pulte saying, why the F are you talking to the president about me? F you. And then,
wow,
I'm going to punch you in your effing face, is what Bessent said. They said Pulte's response was not immediately clear, but it's just the latest outbreak of discontent inside the administration.
Trump is such a fan of chaos.
Mm-hmm.
He might like all this. Like they're fighting for for daddy's attention. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why are you going to Trump behind my back and saying that it's like he's, he's the daddy and the twins are going at it?
Well, and I've said it before. I like to see dissension among the ranks in the White House. I like to see people that are so passionate about their feelings on things, whether it's their pet project or whatever, that they're willing to go to blows over it.
Well, you see, we've experienced some of that with Rubio in the past, you know, not necessarily veering off of the Trump course. I think Rubio has been a wonderful statesman to this point,
mm-hmm.
but he can be very passionate about his points of view. And you're right. You know, that's not a bad thing.
So I guess this big blowout between the two that happened last week was at an exclusive club there near D.C., I believe. And Besant said, one of us is going. One of us is getting kicked out of the club. Either he gets the blank out of here or I do, and then offered to take the matter outside. So
wow.
You're right. I mean, Besant gaining quite the reputation there in the White House for being a 63-year-old man willing to throw down.
Sugar Ray Besson.
Sugar Ray Besson. Absolutely wild.
You're right, but when you lined up Trump's administration and you got an idea of who are the people calling the shots and you got to learn about them, and Besson we knew earlier, he's actually... because
he was a big part of breaking the euro, right, with Soros way back in the day. That's what kind of...
That's right.
That was the biggest thing on his resume.
Yeah, yeah.
Now he's trying to get this country out of the big old debt problem that we're in right now.
Jeff Porcho is straight ahead. FM Talk 106.5. Dalton and I are on our way down to the coastline.
Yeah, you want to come see us down there at the Orange Beach Event Center. On Jeff's show, Scott Buttram, Congressman Barry Moore and John Wall. Then on Midday Mobile, Ask the Sheriff with Sheriff Birch and Big Creek Lake. He's talking that too. That's on the way today.